Sox.
Go, go,
go, go.
Let's go, 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 White Sox. Chicago is proud of you.
This is White Sox Weekly, the Chicago baseball conversation on the new flagship home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
Good afternoon. We are at Guaranteed Rate Field, the White Sox and the Minnesota Twins. Good afternoon, Harry Tynowitz.
Good afternoon, Carmio. How the heck are you?
I know this is a very big day for you, Harry. I don't think you can focus on baseball when the Kentucky Derby is happening. How you doing?
I'm good. Well, I can't focus on anything when DJ is in the booth ready to go, because when you get a Darren Jackson leading off, you got something going.
He is sitting right here. He's ready to roll. We're already deep into a Carson Fulmer discussion. DJ, great to see you. Thanks for joining White Sox Weekly.
Well, thank you very much, Carm. And all that BS I was just getting from Harry, just
what?
Deep up in here, yeah.
Well, any more snow? Thought, any more snow in there? We go skiing.
I thought actually he was leading to that. You know, Harry's going to have a tough time focusing because it's Cinco de Mayo today. Oh yeah.
Oh, that's right. It's right. It used to be not as big a day for me. Now it's just Cinco de Mayo, DJ. I used to refer to it as Cinco de Drinko.
Fair enough.
Way to mature, Harry. I'm very, very proud of you. All right, let's start with last night. White Sox lose to the Twins 6-4. Hang on, there was
missed opportunity.
There was a lot of missed opportunities. Matt Davidson had the bases loaded twice, didn't come through. But let's talk about Carson Fulmer first, who was in the fourth inning, had loaded the bases, and then was down 3-0 on Joe Mauer. Came back and got him. Then he got Brian Dozier to strike out as well. And I'm thinking, okay, he's kind of right in the ship. And then Ricky takes him out and brings in Aaron Bummer, who, guided by the White Sox defense, got out of the inning. And I was thinking you leave him in, but DJ, you were right with the skipper on that one.
Well, absolutely. You and I were talking about this, but you have to look at the whole accumulation of things that took place prior to the two strikeouts. And they weren't really good when you combine everything. But you look at those last two batters he faced, and all of a sudden it's like lightning in a bottle. He's got it. He feels great. He reached back, and he dug in, and he got it from 3-0 to a strikeout to a strikeout after that. You got to leave a little magic out there. You take him out now before something negative happens. I loved that move. And I'm a guy that believes in leaving guys in to learn and do all that, but he really was having a rough night. Do not leave him out there to take chance with one more negative thing that can happen.
You know, DJ, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to actually do it. But with these young pitchers, we aim for consistency. We're seeing it from Lopez. Giolito's having trouble with it. And Carson Fulmer last night wasn't the Carson Fulmer we saw his last outing. How do you get these guys just to be a little more consistent?
Well, I'll tell you straight from the horse's mouth.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there.
Yeah. So. The truth is, when I'm talking to some of the pitching coaches, and I'm not just talking about one here, one of the things they do is they pay attention to if the pitchers are losing their belief in themselves. They have to believe in themselves. If they go out there and they see that, there's doubt, then that's when they realize we got to get these guys off the field, and we can't let this stand too long. We got to impart some of our wisdom. We got to believe in themselves again, get their confidence back up. If they lose their confidence, that's when the pitching coaches are concerned. And so we have to watch that too. And it's up for me and Ed when we're watching as former players. And we can tell when you see a guy trying to hit the outside corner and miss way off of it and scared to throw a ball down the middle of the plate, kind of tells you, he's not too confident in his stuff. So, you make the evaluation, and I think our guys right now with Giolito and some others, the inconsistencies, you just really have to make sure if they're inconsistent because it's mechanical, okay, you can work with that. But if it's inconsistent because they're scared of throwing the ball over the plate because it's going to get hit, then there's a problem. And I think we've had a balance of some of both with these guys, but also they have to grow through that and learn not to let this stuff continue to bother them. And I think I like the process right now. I like the big thing for me, Harry, is this. How many strikes are they throwing compared to balls in every game? If they're throwing 50-50 balls, 50-50 strikes, I got a problem with that. We have to make sure we see improvement if these guys are confident enough to throw more strikes than balls. When we see that consistently, these guys are going to get way better.
White Sox Weekly with you till 5:30 today, 5:35, I should say. Corey Provis, Twins Radio, will be with us at 4:10. The Whimperoo, Tom Pachorik, is going to be in here at 4:35. We'll talk to Tim Anderson at 5:10. I spoke with him in the clubhouse today. He actually sings for us today, which is very enjoyable. And Andy Mazur sat down with Dylan Cease, so we're going to bring that to you around 5:20 today.
That's all on one show?
It's a big show, right, Harry? Big
Man,
show.
Our lineup might be more powerful than the Sox lineup today.
I wouldn't go that far, but, you know, and to some point along the way here, Harry, we got to get your Derby picks. And you wrote a piece for The Athletic this week, which was the most detailed horse piece I've ever read in my life. I still have a headache from it, but congratulations on doing that. TJ, I want to ask you, like, you come out here early and watch BP, and there's Ricky out there throwing BP. I don't know how many managers that you had that would do that. I think it's kind of a cool thing, and I'm sure you've talked to him about like why he does it. Maybe he just enjoys the game of baseball. There's something more to it.
Well, the truth is, it's about 50-50 on managers that throw batting practice. Look, Mike Matheny, I saw him doing it, throwing to a couple of groups down in St. Louis. I had managers that did it. Then there are other managers that didn't. That's why some of the coaches were there. So it's all an individual thing. Tommy Lasorda threw batting practice to the Dodgers till the day he basically finished managing. Tom Kelly for Minnesota did it forever as well. So I don't see Paul Molitor out there as much.
Okay? See, and I saw him come out of the dugout yesterday. He's got his mitt on. He's got a little chew in the back pocket. I'm like, you look like you still want to play the game, which I like, by the way. You know, I hope to be playing whatever I play until it's all over for me deep in the 80s, 90s, something like that. But so I don't know. Like, if you were a skipper, like, would you throw BP?
I would, probably to the early groups. I used to throw batting practice to some of the early groups as a big league player.
Did you really?
When they needed extra pitchers because we didn't have many. The problem I had, to tell you the truth, is I threw too hard. I couldn't control the ball unless I threw really hard. Then I can throw strikes. If I lobbed up there, I couldn't. And our guys like Sean Dunstan, they're yelling at me, you don't do hard. I go, you're a big league hitter. Be quiet and get in the box, man. So yeah, I would. But it would be early to where I could go all the way back to the mound and throw from there where I can get something on it.
Did you ever hit somebody by accident?
Wasn't by accident.
They had it coming.
Sean Dunstan, I'm sorry. Anyway, what?
So DJ, I bet if you gave Dunstan a choice, he would have thrown at Larry Boa. DJ, we saw the Sox had so many opportunities last night to tie up that game. They kept getting runners on base, and they just couldn't get the guys across. What went wrong last night? How do we fix it?
Well, I think both situations arose. Like, the pitcher stepped up and made better pitches in that situation, and our hitters didn't make the correct adjustments to be successful in that situation. If you're going to talk about Matt Davidson's two opportunities, he got beat. Simple as that. I mean, they picked on a little bit of a weakness that he's had lately. They have the scouting report. They knew how to try and attack him, and they beat him because they threw to his weakness, and he just couldn't lay off of certain pitches. But it's hard, man. It's hard, and it's an individual thing. The best of the best, the Frank Thomases, the Jim Tomies, these guys that drove in 100 runs regularly, guess what? They knew the pitcher was on the hook in those RBI situations. Other hitters put the pressure on themselves and think they're on the hook. So you have to balance out who you are. Can you put it on the pitcher, or do you put it on yourself, the pressure? And usually the guys that do well are the ones that are putting it on the pitcher.
White Sox color commentator on the radio on 720 WGN. You listen to him right here, Darren Jackson. The whole just watching you and Farmio now being out here and listening, I've never seen two people talk baseball and just want to keep talking. There's so much love of the game there. Like, you guys can break down any little play to like the fifth degree. I mean, do you ever get to do you love the game as much as I think you love the game? Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, you will go into such depth on stuff that, like, I'm sitting there watching, like, I can't believe they're going to that level right there, but it's a whole nother understanding of the game that I really enjoy it.
Well, you know, that's the thing. A lot of people that aren't true fans of baseball don't get all the intricacies that are going on. The right step with this foot, the turn the wrong way, all these little tiny things that are going to affect the outcome. And I talked to some fans that do understand that, and they absolutely love the detail of baseball. So, look, we're supposed to teach the game up here the best we can. If the game's out of control, it's more let's entertain the fans rather than teach, because the teaching on the field's not going to be a positive thing. It's bad. But, yeah, I like going back and forth with Ed when it comes to that, and we do go back and forth. We can have different opinions, but, you know, in theory, it all starts with the pitcher holding the baseball. And from there, once he lets go of that ball, a lot of things take place. And I think you break it down from that, where Ed's the pitcher, and I'm the one thinking along with the pitcher, because every single play of a game goes with a defender or a hitter thinking along with the pitcher on that pitch.
Well, in the first inning last night, Harry, there was Abreu's at first, right? Rip shot right at him. And the runner on third, I forget who was on third, maybe it was Dozier. It was Dozier. He had tripled. He doesn't come home because Yolmer had stepped towards him. And, I mean, there's a lot going on. There's not a ton going on in the baseball field, but there's also a lot going on in the baseball field. Like, how do you see Yolmer making one step to third to hold him on? I didn't notice it. And I pride myself on seeing these things. But that was like a little detail there that I thought that was pretty cool, that Yolmer's thinking the game like that to try to give what – if there is a hot shot on the ground, then maybe you are going back to the bag and you don't end up scoring on the play. That was a pretty heady play by Yolmer, if that's what he was trying to do.
Well, it had to be something that he was planning. And either it came from the bench or it was his own intuition that taught him, get this guy back, he's too far off, because he was so far off because of the shift. But that's all it took, was that one step. He breaks back toward third base, Carm, and all of a sudden he has no momentum and he still tries to score. And that's the thing for the base runner right there. You got to make a decision. You have no jump. You're praying that first baseman somehow is going to throw it away, because you know you're going to be out if he doesn't. But we got Abreu, and let me tell you, this guy can throw. He's accurate, has a cannon of an arm. He's not afraid to throw across the infield, so he never had a prayer.
And I love the way he inside-outed that pitch to right field last night. That was awesome.
Well, you know, I like to kind of make a little fun of when he makes those swings here, because he pulls his hands in right against his body, and he kind of gator arms it. And he just turns his upper body and fights it off, flares it the other way off the handle. Because the ball, if he doesn't have a bat and he turns like that, it probably hits him in his right shoulder. It's so close to his body. But he's amazing at that, being able to hit those pitches that direction.
Go ahead, Harry.
You know, it's a pleasure to watch. And I've seen him do it more than once. You know, I was with someone who said, oh, that was lucky. It's not lucky. He's done that before. He'll do it again. It's not lucky at all. Unlucky is Yoan Moncada going on the DL. Do you expect him to be right back with the club after his 10 days have passed?
I would say I would prefer, if it's not that he's back in 10 days, he's going to go have to get a little game action. I don't like when guys in front of the world come back and try and get their timing back and hitting and defense and all that stuff. But you know what? Take as long as you need on a hamstring issue, where you are 100%. You can run, jump, you could fly, you could do whatever without it coming back. If you come back, as we just saw, he's a young kid. He says, yeah, I can play through it. Now it sets him back even further. If he'd have just held out for a few more days, he probably would have been fine. But when you're 22, you want to get back on the field. So let's just be patient with him.
So along those lines, like, how do you protect the player from themselves, right? I mean, pitchers always feel like they can go longer. Guys want to be in the lineup. They want to be there for their teammates. But then the manager's job is, at the same time, hey, we don't want to lose you for an extended period of time. Like, how were you as far as, like, get me in there when maybe you weren't 100%?
Well, I was one of those guys, because I was told when I was 17 years old, got into professional ball, you got to prove you can play every day. You have to prove it. I'm like, what does that mean? Why wouldn't I play every day? I didn't even understand what they meant. Coming out of high school, of course you play every day. What's that mean?
Right.
Then I realized playing every day of 140 games into 162 games. Oh, okay, I see what you mean. There's a lot of aches and pains and injuries that come along the way, but this is what the White Sox do. Carm, you got an injury. Your bicep's bothering a little bit. So you rehab it. You come back. You say, all right, I've been out for 2 weeks. I'm ready to go. The doctor says, yeah, he's ready to go. The White Sox look at you and say, you ready to go? You go, yes. Okay, we'll give you 2 more days now.
Right.
They protect you because they have a system in place that when you say you're ready, they make sure it's a couple days even after that to give you the extra.
Right, right. By the way, Jose Rondon is up. Harry, thanks for mentioning the Moncada, who does go on the 10-day DL. Jose Rondon coming up from AAA Charlotte, who has been having a very solid season playing shortstop. He's on base is at .340, his batting average at .286. He's got 4 doubles, 2 triples, 4 home runs. I've had him in my minor league report a bunch, so we'll see how much action he gets. What do you think they'll do there?
Well, I think they're going to do what we should be. Leury Garcia's playing second. You got Anderson and Sanchez on the other side of the infield. If Rondon gets, he's going to get some action. He's here. Let the kid play. Let him find out what he can do up at this level. But I don't envision him being a starter.
Right.
Because you already have guys that are waiting in line for playing opportunities. So, you know, Ricky, you get him on the field, and it'd be quite the experience. And, you know, it's nice for us to get a look at him at this level as well.
It's too bad Joey Cora is still coaching third. You could use him at second.
Hey, look, you know, I said one day when Castillo went down and we had Narvaez, and all of a sudden I'm like, well, wait a minute, who's next in line? Our bullpen catcher, Miguel Gonzalez? Huh?
Oh, it's a thought.
He's played up here before. He's still young, but you can't actually activate a guy that's down in the bullpen. He has to be on the roster and come up here from somewhere. So, but yeah, you're right. I mean, at time, it's all hands on deck when you have a team that's going down like this.
Yeah. Hey, Santiago was pretty good when he started last. You know, it didn't end great, but I expect him to do good things tonight against Lance Lynn. What do you expect from the Southpaw?
I expect us to win tonight, exactly what you're mentioning. I think Santiago is going to have a good day tonight, and I think that Lance Lynn is going to match up well against our offense. We'll have some good at-bats. So I believe tonight White Sox win.
DJ, always great to see you. Appreciate you jumping on White Sox Weekly, and it's great to have you on the station. I'm going to say that every time we talk, so really appreciate the time as always.
Carm, pleasure. Harry, thank you, guys.
Thank you. You've had Carmio, now enjoy Farmio.
We've got a quick timeout. Corey Provis, Twins Radio coming up. Tom Pachorik's going to be on the show. White Sox and the Twins coming on up. Andy Mazur will have your pregame, 5:35. It's White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGM. Our Carmen and Harry Tynowitz. Can you believe that Darren Jackson would hit Sean Dunstan on purpose in batting practice, Harry? That's unbelievable.
Yeah. What do you want to do that with Shawan for? You know, that could bring the Shawanometer down.
I think that actually might make White Sox fans happy right there. Hey, Harry, grab your friends and head to the park.
Both of them?
Yep, both of them. That's not true. You're a very popular guy. I know this. Head to the park for Bleachers and Brews. You get a bleacher ticket and two domestic beers for just $22 to select upcoming games. You do have to be 21 for that or over with a valid ID. Purchase tickets at whitesox.com/brews.
That would be a bad marketing plan if you had to be like exactly 21.
I mean, I don't want to say that I once went to Old Comiskey Park when I was perhaps not 21 and maybe accidentally a beer vendor didn't card me. But I'm not saying that happened, but it may have happened. But they're very strict now. That would never happen these days, but that, you know, a long time
right.
ago.
Right. I don't want to tell you what there was a time, in fact, it was a Sox-Twins game. There was a time when I was drinking wine in the stands of a White Sox game.
Was that a Chardonnay, a Pinot Grigio?
Oh, I want to say, I wish it were a Chardonnay. I want to say it was whatever it was. I can tell you it was a Saturday night, and before they retired a batter, Greg Luzinski had hit a grand slam.
Aw, that's a nice memory right there.
Yeah, it is a nice memory.
Very cool that we're going to have Tom Pachorik on the show today, who was doing the game tonight, and more importantly, he's doing the game tomorrow. The last time with Hawk, a little Sunday action. Hawk will be at Guaranteed Rate Field doing the game with Wimpy, show game, the whole thing, right, tomorrow. So really looking forward to talking to Wimpy. And Corey Provis coming up here right after 4 o'clock. So let's get you set for that and get you into news. And right coming back here, Harry's going to give you a Kentucky Derby tip. That's next. It's all playing into White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN.
Well, when you're sitting back in your rose pink Cadillac, making bets on Kentucky Derby Day. I'll be in my basement room with a needle and a spoon and another girl.
Is this a Kentucky Derby song, team?
Really? Really? That's your question here?
Who is that? Was that the Rolling Stones singing about the Derby?
Yeah, like how do you not know that?
I mean, what tune is that?
That's Dead Flowers.
Eh.
That's you didn't just man the Stones, did you?
Well, if I'm gonna hear a Stones tune, I think a little give me a little Rocks Off, give me a little She's Like a Rainbow. But I do appreciate the fact that it's Derby Day and the Stones have a Derby song. Great job.
I appreciate it. I appreciate that you know she's like a rainbow.
Maybe I put a top five song of all time for me.
That's a fine and dandy choice.
Thank you very much. So I you got a Derby tip here, Harry? Because
yes,
some White Sox fans
yes.
would like to make some money.
You read the piece, right?
I'm still reading it. It's the longest piece.
It's short, man. It's like 900 something words. It was short.
It was short, but it was thick. Like you had so much detail in your Derby piece. It takes a little bit of a commitment to get through, but that's a beautiful thing. You have I think you can win the Derby if you read Harry's piece.
Well, okay. So here's the deal. You know, I wish I had more time to talk about this, but this is White Sox Weekly, not Kentucky Derby Weekly. These are all young horses. So even though Justify appears to be great and Mendelssohn just blew away the field in Dubai and Magnum Moon is also undefeated, I think that when you have 20 horses, it's not going to be a Kentucky Derby. It's going to be a demolition Derby, especially in the soup. It is sloppy at Churchill Downs. The horse I like, Carm, is Good Magic. I like him because he just won a big race, the Bluegrass. He's got a great trainer, Chad Brown. He's the champion 2-year-old from last year. All these horses are 3. And he's the son of Curlin. Being sired by Curlin is like being sired by Fred Carman. You can go all day. And Curlin throws horses that go all day. He threw Palace Malice, who won the Belmont, which is a mile and a half. So my pick is Good Magic. Okay? Good Magic, buddy. All right. We will be back. We're going to talk to the Wimperoo. We're going to talk to Corey Provis. You guys know Corey Provis. He's now the voice of the Twins. And Tom Pachorik is back with the White Sox this weekend. He's with Jason tonight. He is with Hawk tomorrow. We will step away, and then we're right back with news. This is WGN Radio 720.
WGN, the team's flagship radio station.
You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
I was sitting in Austin, Texas, Harry Tynowitz, and Andy Mazur had left WGN to go work for the San Diego Padres, and I had attempted with all my might to fill the Mazur position. And I'm like, who are they going to hire? Who are they getting? And I'm sitting there trading stocks, Kirshner trading, and I hear this voice come through, and I'm like, all right, dude sounds pretty good.
Judd Surratt, outstanding hire. You're right. Judd was a great hire, yes.
Corey Provis, welcome to White Sox. That was my first introduction to you.
Was that right?
That's a true story right there.
So Andy left... not long after the Bears Super Bowl, right? The Bears
That's
were playing
true.
The Colts in the Super Bowl, I believe, in Miami. So, and then he went to San Diego, and the process went for a long time. I got the job. The Cubs were wrapping up spring training in Arizona, and I went out to Mesa, interviewed out there, and I was living in Birmingham at the time. And I got the job offer the last week of spring training because the Cubs were playing 2 games in Vegas against Seattle. I got the job offer from the great Dave Ennett on Monday, packed up my little garden home best as I could, and then drove home Wednesday, about an 11-hour drive to Chicago, unpacked for 5 seconds, got back on the plane Thursday, shadowed Dave Friday, interviewed Matt Merton. For a pregame show, and then I was on the air Saturday. So it was just a weird 5 days how all that played out back in 2007.
Yeah, in honor of Pat Hughes, I feel like we should pronounce his name Matt Merton.
Merton. That's right, Ty. That's right. We all would say Merton, but yeah, the great Pat would say Matt Merton. That's exactly right.
And then from there, you go and you work with Uke,
mm-hmm.
and you know you're around Pat Hughes and Ron Santo and Uecker and now up to Minnesota. It's an amazing journey you're on, Ben.
I'm lucky. It's a great ride. And I heard Pat Foley mention this years ago, and I think he nailed it. About if you're fortunate to do this for a living, you work in the toy department. And that's what we do. And for baseball, you travel the country on these charter flights, you stay at these posh hotels, and you get to see these cathedrals throughout a six-month season. So it is a great gig. I love what I do, and I don't take it for granted for a single second.
Hey, speaking of cathedrals, I'm lucky enough to have already been up to the beautiful new ballpark in Minneapolis. For people that have not been up there yet, can you give us a little preview of what they might get if they take a trip up there?
It's a beautiful, beautiful ballpark, Tiny. It's Target Field opened up in 2010, and it's a small, intimate stadium. That's when you go around and you see some of the vast new stadiums that are built. You know, there's not a ton of parking around there. They were pretty much locked into a small amount of downtown space. This old warehouse district that was run down, some abandoned parking lots, and it's a very tightly confined ballpark, but they nailed it. And I know that, you know, the weather has been so lousy in the last two or three years. It's come up more than it did in 2010, 2011, even 2012, about why was there no roof and why was it not retractable. Well, the money wasn't there at the time, and also the fans were stuck in the Metrodome for decades,
right,
on a beautiful summer day. And the first rain delay they had in 2010, fans were outside cheering. They were just so happy to be outdoors at a baseball game, could care less that it was raining. And the Twins have this longtime curator. He saves everything. Maurer blows his nose, he wants the tissue. He saves everything. The first hailstorm that they had at Target Field, he races out. He grabs a piece of hail. That hail is in a freezer in his office. I mean, he is that specific about all the different things he has picked up and collected over the decades covering the Twins.
You know anybody like that in radio in Chicago, Harry?
Yes, I do. I won't give away his name, but his initials are Les Grobstein.
and we love him, for the record.
We love the Grobber.
We absolutely do.
In fact, if we went by Grobber's house right now, he's probably got, like, you know, Tom Brunansky's cup from the 87 World Series.
If we go back in radio time, I once moved Les Grobstein on a weekend. It was a three-day move. I moved every single media guide he ever had. We don't need to tell that story right now, but that was probably enough. But that's a true story, too, as I look back. All right. Your Minnesota Twins, Corey, were supposed to be right there with the Indians in the division so far, and they started out, you know, fairly well, but then the skid happened. So what's going on with the Twins?
8-5 to start the year, and then they had the odd delay with the White Sox series, only playing that one game, and
right,
were snowed out the three. Then they go to Puerto Rico, and then you haven't played for 5 days. The last guy you want to face is Corey Kluber when you're on a 5-day break without any competitive baseball, and they didn't play well that first game, but came back and then won the second game in 16 innings, and it just hasn't clicked. It's an odd thing to see play out each and every day. And the guy going tonight, you know, I hadn't seen Lance Lynn all that much as a Cardinal. I saw him, I think, when he came up as a reliever before he became a starter, and he has struggled. His fastball command hasn't been there from the get-go. He signed late. It was a one-year deal. They finalized that deal in mid-March. I was kind of surprised that it ended up happening, but the resume on Lynn has been too good. He's been too durable. After missing a season 2016 Tommy John, if you look over his career before and after, he gives you 30-plus starts. His ERA is competitive in the threes, but so far it's been a struggle, and it just boils down to a lack of command. His walk rate is just way too high.
Hey, Corey, how good is Miguel Sano?
We don't know yet. You know, we don't know. If you asked me that question, Harry, after 2015, and I would say, boy, this guy is maybe the next coming of Miguel Cabrera. I mean, he just has power. He has recognition of the strike zone. He was getting on base. He was drawing his walks. It was an impressive small sample. But then, since then, you know, they tried him in right field in 2016. That was a disaster. That was bad from the get-go. But he's battled some weight issues. He's battled some injuries. He's battled performance. He's battled recognition. So I don't know. I think that the label or even the comps that you want to place on Miguel Sano have changed, because there was a more direct comparison I think you could make to many, not just Cabrera, but to other names in the game when he first came up, that this guy could be something like that. It's just unknown right now because he hasn't played all that much.
White Sox fans remember Paul Molitor from, you know, playing the Blue Jays in the playoffs, and I just think it's so cool to see him walking out on the field yesterday, got a little dip in the back pocket, got the mitt on, looks like he probably wants to go play rather than manage. At least that's how like I'm thinking. Like, but so what's Molitor like for you?
It's his fourth year, and he had a really competitive team that surprised everybody in 15. 16, the Twins were the worst team in baseball, losing 103 games. And then last year, kind of out of nowhere, had this great second half, and he won the American League Manager of the Year, and the Twins played well. What I've noticed about Paul from day one is that he rarely brings up his own career publicly. Because he could play that card every day. I mean, he could play that. You know, any player that comes his way and is maybe struggling or needs a piece of advice, well, Paulie would say, "Oh, this is kind of what I would have done," or "This reminds me of when I faced so and so." He doesn't play that card, and I don't think that's lost on the players in that Twins clubhouse. Because at times he made the hardest thing in sport look so easy,
right,
hitting a baseball.
Right.
You know, we saw Matt Davidson have a tough time bringing guys in last night, but I love the Sox half of that trade. We saw Addison Reed. What can you tell Sox fans about what you foresee for the former Sox closer, Addison Reed?
Reed's been good. I mean, he gave it up the other night, but he has done his part. You know, the new additions, and the Twins signed 7 free agents, and they traded for Odorizzi. And the Twins are the only team in all of Major League Baseball without a single player signed under contract in 2020. So they have immense payroll flexibility coming here in the near future. Now, some of their young guys, they're going to get more expensive as they enter arbitration, the Buxtons, Rosarios, Keplers, Sano, Jose Barrios. But, you know, these guys are all homegrown players. But with Reed, they brought on him and others because, Harry, the Twins, the last 6 years that I can speak of, They were near the bottom, if not at the bottom, in getting strikeouts from their pitchers. Both starters, relievers, you name it, they were at the bottom and just getting strikeouts from their pitchers. So they try to get some more strikeout arms. And the bulk of the guys that they signed are one-year deals. Reed got a two-year deal. So there's one of the few guys that signed through 2019. But Reed is established. He's been around. If Rodney has a rough patch or he goes 3 straight days, then Addison Reed will get that chance in the ninth inning if Rodney can't go.
Does Addison – I'm sorry. I was going to ask –
No, you go.
I was just going to ask, does Addison Reed know how to shoot an arrow into the sky?
I would imagine that he could do it. Yeah, I'd imagine that he's been around long enough that he could do that. You know the story of that? I didn't know of Rodney and the tilted hat and also the arrow that he flies. So he tilts his hat to honor his dad, who passed away just days before his big league debut in 2002 with the Tigers. His dad was a fisherman in the Dominican, and to battle the sun, he used to tilt his hat to the side.
How cool is that?
So that's awesome.
How he honors his dad with that. And the arrow, La Flecha, is Spanish for the arrow. And that's from his community in the Dominican Republic. That's kind of a nickname that they have for his hometown. It's called, just known as, for people that live there, as La Flecha. So he does that. Now, that didn't start in 2002. That, I think, is more recent, maybe going back to his time with the Rays. That is honoring his hometown. But the tilted hat, you know, people may hate it because, oh, put your hat on straight. You're disrespecting the game. He's honoring his dad. He's honoring his dad, who was a fisherman in the Dominican, who never got a chance to see his son play in the big leagues.
Yeah, I've always let a guy have a little bit of style out there. There's there's people that do all sorts of things on the baseball field. He wants to tilt his cap one way. But the story behind it makes it even cooler. Dan Gladden, who you do Twins Radio with, by Corey Provis on 720 WGN, he sits there with his mitt.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen that before? A dude is just ready to make plays?
Well, Bill Schroeder, I mean, a lot of guys, Bill Schroeder in Milwaukee, he'd hold a ball. And Mark Grant holds a ball. So, I mean, so some guys, yeah, they'll do that. Jose Mota with the Angels, he'll have a glove on the entire time. But Danny, yeah, he's got that glove on, and it's not obviously his game-worn glove, but he's made it something of a special piece of our equipment in that he's probably had it now for 2 or 3 years. He's had so many guys sign it. He's had Hall of Famers on there from players and broadcasters. He had Commissioner Manfred sign it. So that's become quite the piece of equipment that we see every day, and it's a treasure.
How many balls has he caught with that thing?
Maybe one or two. He's dropped a few. And,
really?
Yeah, he dropped one. Where were we? It was last year or 2 years ago at Target Field. It was a Drew Butera foul ball that came in the booth. And he dropped it, and I'm calling the action, and I mention on the air, oh, he dropped the ball, and I start laughing. And he comes over, and he starts beating me up on the air because I'm laughing at him. So that happened a couple of years ago.
That's nuts. Hey, now, from an outsider's perspective, what is your view of what the White Sox are currently in the midst of?
I think it's exciting times. I think that you can't ignore what the White Sox have coming. And it took some established pieces, right, in Eaton and Sale to get what they got back. Now, they're prospects, and some are going to pan out, some aren't. If you get five guys in a trade, they're all minor league players. History says all five guys are not going to pan out. Maybe two or three will. That's still a pretty good percentage in this day and age. I think it's exciting. I mean, we follow it, and you know, the White Sox have one of the top farm systems in the game right now. That was the Twins in 2014, 2015. They had a top five, top three farm system, and those guys are now here in Buxton and Kepler and Rosario and Sano and Barrios, and it's exciting. I mean, I can't wait to see Jimenez, and looking forward to seeing Robert and Basabe and Dunning and all these guys, Kopech, and I keep reading good things, and it's going to be exciting times here.
Corey Provis, Twins Radio, great to see you.
Great to see you guys. Harry, great to speak with you again, my friend, and enjoy this beautiful day here in Chicago.
All right, Corey, you're awesome. Appreciate the
time. All right, guys, thank you.
White Sox Weekly continuing. Tom Pachor coming up after 4:30, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly continuing. I'm at Guaranteed Rate Field. My name is Mark Harmon. Harry Tynewitz back at our studios. Good to talk to Corey Provis, Twins Radio. Harry, you have another Derby tip?
I do. The traditional Kentucky Derby drink is the mint julep. And now, I would have, for about 30 years, I would have drunk anything. But the mint julep, kids, you want to stay away from that. You know what the mint julep is, Carm?
Do I know what the mint julep is?
Yeah, there's two ingredients besides the ice.
Tequila?
No, it's straight Kentucky bourbon and mint. That's kind of like Jim Beam meets Aquafresh.
It's a fascinating combo that's been enjoyed for many a decade.
No thanks. I'll just have a rum and scope.
Well, there you go. all right. Let's do a couple things here. First off, Rick Renteria spoke before the game today. We're going to hear that in a second here. Also, very important note here, Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Sox fans, they can join the White Sox as they take on the Texas Rangers. That's Thursday, May 17th at 7:10 p.m. First 10,000 fans, you get a free Ricky's Boys Don't Quit t-shirt. It's sponsored by the Village of Bedford Park. Bring your business home to Bedford Park and win big. Purchase your tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME. So here's Ricky Renteria speaking before the game today, and he tackled the question on, you know, some of the tough decisions that have to be made during the rebuild and being the manager in the thick of it all.
Any of the players that I have, or anybody in general, certainly has the right to ask any question of the tactics that we use in particular situations. I will always have a reason for why we do something. People may not like the reasoning behind me doing something, but I'll always have a reason as to why we're doing it. And every situation is different. Some moments present themselves, and I have to deal with a particular situation with a pitcher or a position player, whatever the case might be, and I have to have them understand why it is that I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm more concerned that my players understand why I'm doing certain things at times, but I'm not afraid to answer the question from anybody else about as to why I do sometimes what we do. The most important thing I have, and the biggest concern that I have, is that we continue to move forward in a particular direction as an organization in total.
So there's Ricky. He almost, to me, Harry, seems eager to answer the questions, at least when they come from the media. Like, he's expecting it, and he's, like, ready to respond and tell you exactly why he made whatever decision he made.
I mean, he's driving in the park every day, you know, like maybe one other guy is. Everybody else is worried about, you know, what's going to happen today, and, you know, if he uses this guy in the bullpen, when can this guy come back? And Ricky Renteria's got to have a crystal baseball. I mean, he's got to look ahead. He can't just be looking, you know, at the short term. And that perspective, you know, he had it when he was on the north side of town. And I think that perspective serves the White Sox well.
So we'll hear a little bit more from Ricky coming up, but let's take a quick timeout. And Tom Pachorek, who is very excited to talk to you, Harry Tynewitz. I mean, when I told him that, I mean, he lit up. Like, he's excited to be on with Hawk tomorrow, but I think he's super excited to be on with you in about 5 minutes here on 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly continuing. The Wimperoo is with us at Guaranteed Right Field. I'm Mark Carmen. Harry Tynowitz with us. Wimpy, you got the name from Tommy Lasorda. Is that right?
Yes. Regretfully, I did. 1968, I signed with the Dodgers, and Tommy was the manager. And we all had to eat together and be together and do everything together. So the first time we went out to dinner, a lot of guys ordered steaks. You know, the Bobby Valentines, Bill Buckner, and Steve Garvey. They had a lot of money. I didn't have any, so I ordered triple cheeseburgers. And poof, Lasorda gave me that name Wimpy since then, and it has stuck. And I'm really used to it now. I don't even answer to my regular name. Sometimes I forget.
Well, you know, it is so great to have you back in the booth. You know, it's like we don't, you know, realize how much time has passed since the last time you called the
Harry,
White Sox.
Isn't it amazing? You're about 105 now, aren't you?
I'm 104. But, you know, that's just because I used that Grecian hair, Grecian formula for octogenarians.
There you go. I'm listed three times in the Old Testament myself.
Yes. When you were a freshman, God was a junior?
But something like that.
How long does it take you? I know you're constantly around baseball and you're calling other games, but how long does it take you, like, when you get back to the South Side to, like, feel like, you know, you're part of the White Sox broadcast team?
Oh, I'll tell you, as soon as I got here, feel welcome. All the same guys that were here when we were announcing with Hawkett when I first started out in 1988, and the guys are great. You know, no, I really don't think – I don't want to say it's as easy as stepping on a bicycle again, but really it hasn't been any any problem whatsoever. You know, and I just really enjoyed working with Hawk during those years. And now, of course, the White Sox have a great – announcer, and Jason, he's just fantastic. He's got a great sense of humor. He knows the game well, and I keep telling him his job is to make guys like me look smart as the color guy. But yeah, Burnett, Jason is really terrific, and I think the White Sox have got a great deal for many years to come. And you know, because you're replacing an icon in Hawk, and I just hope someday that people get smart enough at the Hall of Fame to put him in Cooperstown. I think he certainly deserves it.
So why do you, okay, let's answer that question, Tapa Truck. Why is he not in there yet?
I mean, Beats me. I don't vote. I don't vote for anything. But why?
Right.
Well, I think a lot of people don't like Hawk because of his homerism. You know, he wants the White Sox to win. So what? You know, and he's very demonstrative in expressing that. So I think that might irk a lot of people.
See, and I think that's, at least for me, that's what makes him great. Like, I like a homer.
Me too.
The best announcers, you want to know that they're in there with you, that they feel exactly the same way that the diehard fans do. I mean, that's what I love listening to. I don't want the cookie cutter. I want somebody that's
right.
Battling.
He's not doing a network game. If he were doing a network game, that's a different deal. He's calling the Sox games. Who else should he cheer for?
That's exactly right here. I agree with you 100%. And he kind of plugged that in me, too. And I became there right with him, you know, cheering, yes, put it on the board.
Now, do you own a Hawk Harrelson alarm clock?
No, I want to get one, though.
I mean, Brooks,
I want to get that Hawk Solo one. What a great ad that is. That is really
spectacular,
good.
Isn't it?
Like, yeah, they do a lot of good stuff here. They've always have.
Would you call it like a marriage between the two of you? I mean, like, people, I think when they look at the sort of like the golden age of White Sox broadcasting, they're going to talk about you, Tom Pachorik, the Wimperoo, and Hawk. I mean, I think the 90s, it's a special, special time.
Oh, wow, that's a great honor. Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate that. But, it was a very special time for me. And, I'll never forget those days. And all the guys that we worked with here have just been spectacular. And the White Sox organization, starting with Jerry Reinsdorf on down, really treat their employees great. You know, contrary to what people think, they know White Sox are kind of a put together outfit here, but they really take care of their employees and do a great job in supporting them too. They're very loyal, in other words.
He's incredibly loyal, and you can see how long those guys have been there. I think Bob Grimm has been there, you know, since about like 1970.
The Grim Reaper?
Yeah.
Forever. Yeah. Well, I know. Bob, he's been there an awfully long time. How about Roger Bosser, the groundskeeper, 52 years?
And he might be, and think of the money he saved Jerry when he moved the field over. I think he might be Jerry's all-time favorite employee.
Yep, possibly, yeah. And Herm Schneider has been here, what, 38 years as the head trainer? Still the best trainer I've ever been around.
Yeah.
Spectacular. Really good. Really, really good.
So tonight you're doing the game with Jason Benetti, who does a phenomenal job, as you mentioned, alongside Steve, and will be replacing Hawk permanently, obviously, at the end of the year. But you got the final game with Hawk tomorrow afternoon. I'm hoping that you like shed a tear top and short, something along those lines. I think it's a big deal.
Like at old Comiskey when the last game was played there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping that isn't the last game that Hawk and I do together.
Okay.
I'm hoping that maybe I could squeeze in towards the end of the year. You know, if the opportunity presents itself, I'd be more than happy to come back again because I know tomorrow's going to be a special night. Yeah, you were right, and I don't really want that to happen. To be the last game, because I just like to, you know, I never thought it would be that way. You know, when I come back, I didn't want that to have a sudden ending like that. I'd like to perpetuate the whole thing because it's been such a great experience.
Carm, can we talk to some rabbis and get an extra Jewish holiday so Wimpy can come back?
I invented this one for Stoney.
I believe you might have. So I want to go back to 1983, and Dewey Lamar Hoyt wins game one. Floyd Bannister gets beaten game two, and you guys return to face the Orioles game three on a Friday night, the middle of October, and Richard Dotson's on the hill. Now the AA pitching coach, Richard Dotson. And it just got ugly. And then there was that Saturday game when my all-time favorite White Sox pitcher, I've still never met the guy, Britt Burns, pitched his heart out. His heart out. And you guys, was the 10-inning game, was it, Tom?
Yeah, at least. I thought it was 12.
12 innings? And I've chosen to block it out of my memory.
Yeah, me too. That was a horrible day. That was gut-wrenching is what that was.
It was. I still don't know what Dubczynski was doing around third base.
Well, yeah, that was a... didn't work out for us.
And the Orioles, of course, go on and they win the World Series.
They were good, too. Let's give them a little credit, too. They had a heck of a team.
So do you believe that if you guys had beaten Baltimore, you would have also captured the Fall Classic?
Absolutely. We'd have beaten the Phillies. We were as good as Baltimore, and I think we were definitely better than Philadelphia was at that year. You know the thing, though, Harry, that one of the things that we really wanted to win the series for was Charlie Law was our hitting coach, and we knew that he had terminal cancer. Mm. And Lauren Babe was traveling with us, one of the great scouts that the White Sox had over the years. He was traveling with us, too, for the last half of the season. And we knew that Lauren was in trouble, too, that we'd possibly, at the end of the season, would not see both of those guys. And that's the way it worked out, too. They both passed away on the winter, and we just would have, to me, it hurt more to let those guys down than it was, for my own self and everybody else, because we thought we'd have a chance to come back again.
The game four was a 10-inning game, in case anyone's driving around screaming. It was 10 innings. We got it.
Tito Landrum, yeah.
Tito Landrum. I know why they ran him out of St. Louis.
Oops.
I want to go 1984, May 8th. The Milwaukee. That's a historic game. Tell us about what happened that day, Tapachoro.
Well, I was at Old Comiskey Park. It was a tradition that the guys that weren't starting the game would eat a pizza in the umpire's room about the third inning from Connie's, of course. And this particular day, I paid for it. So, naturally, I was in there scarfing, and all of a sudden, one of the clubhouse boys knew where we were, which was shocking. He said, "Wimpy, you got to pinch it for Kitty." He says, "Why?" He's got a migraine. Well, when's he up? He says, "You're up next." I said, "Oh, man." So I went out there, threw my bat and helmet, and I should have before I hit. And I struck out. But the game went on for, 25 innings? And I wound up getting 10 plate appearances and 9 official at-bats. And a lot of people may not even know this, but I have the record for most hits. That was 5 by a guy who didn't start a game. Of course, it took 25 innings, actually 3 games to get it. But that's my only claim to fame, I guess, in the record books.
I didn't know that till today. Harry, did you know that he was 5-for-9, and it still stands today. The most hits for anybody who did not start a game, the Wimperoo.
Yeah.
I can't stress enough how much fun it was to watch that 83 team. And, the Sox fans were sort of teased by the Southside Hitmen in 77. That 83 team, you know, and Tom had been here, but I mean, the guys on that, I mean, it didn't look like the kind of team the White Sox had been putting out on the field. It looked like a completely different team. You know, you had, you know, Tom and Kemp on the corner outfield spots. You had, you know, there were Laws everywhere. There was Rudy, there was Vance. You know, you had, you know, just a tremendous pitching staff, and, you know, it was just, it was a game. It was, boy, if they had beaten Baltimore on Saturday, they would have beat him on Sunday. But I want to play more Jim Pechorek tape. Let's get some more Jim Pechorek sound out.
Well, it is
my
incredible.
Brother went to the Japanese League for 6 years after that and actually won a batting title. But getting back to our team just for a second, Harry, we had speed. We had great defense. Julio Cruz was a great leadoff man, along with Rudy Law. They could really fly. And we had great pitching. We had outstanding power and good batting average guys, too. So it was a well-rounded team.
Juice Cruz scoring the clincher to go to the playoffs.
Right.
Give me a favorite old Comiskey Park memory. I'm always nostalgic or Tom Pechorek. No matter what, I like old Comiskey. I like Chicago Stadium. If I could go to Ebbets Field, I would. You know, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, well, it's hard to beat that 25 inning marathon,
right.
And especially eating the. But the crazy stuff was going on all the time. Mark Hill was the comic. You know, he'd put shaving cream in the phone, and you'd answer it, and blah, where's that booter? One time, I occasionally had a cigarette, and booter went. I made an out. I popped up to the catcher or something. I was madder than heck, and I lit up a cigarette, and the thing immediately exploded in my face. And I did three other ones, too. And he used to do things like that. But that was very commonplace, and you kind of accepted that as daily ritual. And you'd get on each other. You know, like we'd get on Kitty when, you know, Kitty would come in talking about himself, and then somebody would go, catch 22, and everybody would yell out, catch 22, and somebody would open up an envelope and say, what would Ron Kittle do if you hit him 100 fly balls?
Karnak,
that's it.
Tony La Russa, did you know back then that he was going to be become, quote-unquote, you know, the Tony La Russa?
No, I didn't. No, actually, you know, Tony was really high-strung and, you know, during those years with the Sox, and he became a lot calmer, you know. Great. He was a very good manager when he was here, but I think he really developed his craft when he was with Oakland and St. Louis. He became a great manager and certainly a Hall of Fame manager.
Yeah.
Well, I Tony La Russa was like a completely different guy, you know, than so many other managers today. I don't know how Tony would do in today's game. You know, Wimpy, what about, you know, replay? I love that we have it, but it certainly needs to be, you know, it seems like it's not taking as long this year. You know, they're talking about, you know, the pitch clock. Do you like the mound visits? Do you like the way that baseball is headed?
Well, I kind of like the mound visits. Limit those because those are just boring. They just take away from the, you know, the rhythm of the game. I do like the replays, you know, because it could be the difference in winning or losing a ball game. And you certainly want to get the calls right. So I don't really mind the delays for that. And all in all, I pretty much am satisfied with the way they're doing. I don't think they're doing anything to harm the game. I think the best thing they ever did was put that wild card in. Mm-hmm. You know, look, and you know, and right. Everybody loves it now, but everybody was ranting and raving that wasn't going to be any good.
That's Bud Selig.
Selig was great. Bud was outstanding, and Jerry Reinsdorf was at a big part in making a lot of those decisions too. That has made baseball a lot better. You know, for the players and the fans, I think.
So what you're saying is that Jerry Reinsdorf basically ran baseball when Bud Selig was the commissioner.
Sure, Harry, whatever you say, buddy.
That's what I think. That's what I think happened. And Ron Storto, who was your producer, says,
yes, Ronnie, of course.
Ron Storto says, as funny as you guys were on the air, it was much more fun between innings and after the game.
Oh, yeah. Those secrets we can't reveal, right?
Oh, yeah.
I've forgotten all of them anyway, so it wouldn't matter.
Tom Pachor, great to see you.
Great. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Harry. Yeah,
always a pleasure, Wimperoo. Have fun with the Hawk tomorrow.
Thank you. I will.
Mercy.
I will. Mercy.
We will be watching.
He gone.
White Sox Weekly continuing, 720 WGN. Hey, bring your family of four to a White Sox game for as low as $49. Our family four-pack includes four tickets, four hot dogs, four chips, four sodas, Harry Tino. It's upper level and lower level packages available. Check out all the available dates at whitesox.com/4packs today. Dogs, chips, sodas, tickets. It's a great, great, great deal. How awesome was that to talk to Wimperoo, Harry?
That was. I mean, he's awesome. He's one of everybody's favorite players. He was a big part of White Sox baseball. His 4 years here were good years, and just such a likable guy, a fun guy. He was like one of the first guys that really interacted with, you know, fans. He was a perfect choice to go up into the booth. And he always covered for everybody. You know, got a lot of guys that, like, you know, just ignore, you know, people. You got a lot of guys that talk down to you. He was one of those guys that always brought you up to his level.
I had never met him until yesterday, Harry. And so, I walked in and asked him if he would come on. And then I come back today. Sure, Mark. Yep, I'll be there. He remembered my name. Like, that's just like a little detail that I'm like the worst ever with names. Mm-hmm. But I just thought it just spoke to, like, this. You are just a rock solid guy.
I know you, but McCarm, you got to have a better self esteem. You know, because like the other day you texted me, "Hey, Chelsea remembered my name." Like, okay. You've been dating her for a year.
Yeah, that was big too. That was big.
But hey, Steve Kemp was gone. He wasn't on the '83 team. And I brought him up as I was misremembering the guys on that team, and he didn't say anything, looking out for me. That's what I'm talking about with the Tom Pachoric.
Now you threw yourself under the bus.
That's what happened. Sox fans heard it. You know, they know. So if you see him later tonight, please thank him. Tell him I said thanks for not outing me, but I have to out myself.
Yeah, well, and we played the highlight of his brother, which was perhaps not the best thing that we've ever done, but he didn't seem to care at all. So
these
things happen. How about the fact that he's got three, you know, him and two other brothers that played in the major leagues? That's a talent.
Pretty good. Right there. That's pretty good.
You and Danny did not play in the majors. Me and Bruce and David Carman did not play professional sports.
No, my brothers and I, we did not play in the majors, but we all were at the Kentucky Derby together in 1987. So that was cool.
That's huge. That's definitely huge.
We were in the same betting window.
That's amazing. White Sox fans, celebrate your Italian roots with Italian Heritage Night. It's presented by Beggar's Pizza when the Sox take on the Texas Rangers. That's Friday, May 18th. Italian Heritage Night will feature specially priced tickets and a post-game fireworks show. To purchase those tickets, you can visit whitesox.com/Italy. Quick timeout. Tim Anderson coming up after 5 o'clock, 720 WGN.
It's great to be back with WGN.
It's White Sox Weekly on the official radio station of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly till 5:35. Andy Mazur warming up in the bullpen with your pregame show. Sox and the Twins coming up. First pitch, 6:10 at Guaranteed Rate Field. Just a beautiful night for baseball. Come on out. Tickets available. Looks like a good crowd coming in here, though, tonight. So it should maybe be the biggest crowd of the year. I'm seeing people all the way down the right field line, Harry, in the upper deck. So a big crowd tonight. And, Harry, you coming out?
I will not be out. My in-laws are in town. You know, it's Reggie's birthday Monday.
Aw. Happy birthday, Reggie.
So my in-laws are in town. We are going to chillax with them, assuming I'm invited, assuming I make the cut. I'll have to wait. I'll have to wait for Kessler's next news report. But, Carm, we asked right before, and also tomorrow's going to be a really good day to catch the Sox and the Twins on the south side. We asked before the break, our text question would be, which, because today's the Derby, which White Sox, current or former, would make the best jockey?
Yeah, I'm going with James Shields, Harry, because James Shields is working the White Sox Derby pool before the game today down in the clubhouse. Shields was leading the charge of getting everybody together and organized. I'm sure it's, you know, maybe for a couple of potato chips. And they've got – I was asking a bunch of White Sox, who do you got in the Derby? Who do you got in the Derby? None of them knew any of the horses' names, Harry. They had not read your piece.
Oh, well, maybe next – they should get the Athletic, because the Athletic covers baseball tremendously.
Who's winning the Derby today, Harry?
You are. What's interesting, Carm, is my boy Jack. You think of like all the former White Sox players named Jack, like Jack Brohammer, second baseman, number 10. My boy Jack, 30-1 in the program. He's bet down right now to 5-1 because of the slop.
Interesting.
So I think the best answer here. I've met John Cangelosi. I will not say John Cangelosi. He was 5'8", which towers over this guy. Harry Chappis. Harry Chappis played shortstop when Don Kessinger was the player manager, and Harry Chappis was 5'3".
Interesting. Okay. That would be the size of a, or closer to the size of a jockey.
Right. Imagine a 5'3" guy playing shortstop today in baseball.
Well, you know, it's one of the beautiful things about the game, though, Harry, right? I mean, MVP, best player in the game. Jose Altuve is 5'6".
Right. Right? Right, yeah. I know. But I mean, this guy's 3 inches shorter than Altuve. And, right. You know, basketball, you're Mr. NBA. You know, I mean, Muggsy Bogues, right? Spud Webb, how tall were they?
Spud Webb was 5'7". Muggsy Bogues was 5'3".
5'3, that's unbelievable.
Isn't it?
That's, yeah, both colleged in Carolina, right? NC State and Wake Forest.
That's correct, too. Very good. Spud Webb went in a dunk contest at 5'7", that basketball fans I'm sure remember. Do you know Tim Anderson played some basketball back in the day, too, Harry?
Yes, he did, Captain Segway.
So there you go. I was able to run into the White Sox shortstop before the game today, and he's very tight with Yolmer Sanchez. That's included in here, and some Derby stuff. And Tim Anderson is going to sing for you. So here he goes, the White Sox shortstop, Tim Anderson. Do you know what day today is, Tim Anderson?
Yeah, Cinco de Mayo, right?
What big sporting event happens today?
I don't know.
I'm hearing like there's a bunch of White Sox perhaps in the Kentucky Derby pool. I'm assuming that you're not in it, or are you?
Yeah, I'm in it. I'm all in.
Who's your horse? Do you know?
We haven't picked yet, so I don't know.
Do you know any of the horses by name? I do not.
No, I don't know.
So we're going for some blind luck here. That's all right. Would you call yourself a gambler? Do you enjoy the casino? Do you enjoy the horses?
No, I'm not a gambler, man. I don't like the casinos, but, you know, my teammates are doing this thing with horses, and I did it for the last 2 years, so I figured I'd do it again and get lucky.
So whenever I walk in here, it seems like you and Yolmer are just having a grand old time. Can you talk about that bond?
Yeah, man, that's like, you know, that's like my brother, man. We got a great relationship. You know, man, we always having fun and just clowning and messing with people and even picking on each other. So, you know, kind of keep the team loose and just have fun while doing it.
How's your Spanish?
Oh, it's not so great. I know a couple words, but they're not good words. But, you know, for the most part, man, I communicate with them, and, you know, they get it. They understand me.
So his English is significantly better. You got to give him credit.
Yeah, his English is good, man. His English is good, and, you know, man, he understands what I'm saying. And if not, I can explain it to him, or, you know, somebody will explain it to him, but he gets it.
Who controls the music in here? How does that work?
Whoever gets to the aux cord. So you know, it's open gym. You know, whoever's first to it can control it. But it's, you know, it's usually different every day, and you know, everybody listens to everything. So, you know, I listen to a little Spanish, I listen to country, and you know, we have that rap going. So you know, it's I like a lot of music.
Well, you got the Born in the South thing going on, so yeah. So you don't hate the country, huh?
No, my favorite country song is I Got a Little Dirt on My Boots. So I like that song, and I listen to a lot of Spanish music too. So even though I don't understand the words, but I kind of, you know, hum along.
I Got a Little Dirt on My Boots. Who sings that?
I don't know who sings it, but I like it.
Could you do a line here real quick?
I got a little dirt on my boots. That's all I know.
That was strong. That was real good.
Yes.
All right. So as far as the team goes, how are you looking at the start? How are you looking at going forward from here?
You know, man, just continue working. You know, it's, missed a couple bumps in the world, road. You know, we learning, man. The future's bright. You know, so we can't focus on the past. You know, once you go through a rebuild, you got to understand that you're going to struggle some, and that's what we understand that. You know, it's going to be some tough games, and it's going to be some exciting games. So we kind of stay in between, and you know, got not get too high, not get too low. So you know, we pick one another up, and we just have fun doing it, and you know, it's going to be great.
I love the energy you play with. I love how much fun you're having out there. I'm also kind of a new school baseball guy. Like, I like to see joy of the game. If somebody hits a home run and all that type of stuff, I don't want to necessarily have that big conversation. But I enjoy that you do that. I think there's more people out there that way than, say, the old school way.
Yeah, definitely, man. We're in a new era. You know, we're in a new wave, man, new generation. And, you know, man, you know, we play with a lot of energy and have fun. You know, no disrespect to anybody. But, you know, that's just how we go about it because we are, you know, we're in the 20s. And we're ready, man. We're hungry and we're just having fun, man. You know, we can go out and play every day, man, and play our heart out. And if we come up short, at least we know we went out and, you know, we gave our best shot. So, you know, we play with a lot of energy and just have fun while doing it.
One word for White Sox fans who are kind of like, oh, wow, when are they going to do it? When are they going to win? What would you say?
Man, just, you know, stay excited. Stay excited, man. And, you know, just trust in the process and stick with us. You know, it's going to be some tough times, but, you know, man, we got to learn from those and keep working.
Give me one more song on that, one more lyric, or just go back to the, give me one more little country. I got to feel it.
Got a little dirt on my boots.
Tim Anderson, you're the man.
All right, man. All right, thank you.
John Pardee, Harry Tynowitz, sings Dirt on My Boots, which is huge.
Now, is John related to Jack Pardee, the former Bears coach?
I don't believe so, no. What do you think of Tim Anderson sing?
I like him singing. I think he sounds real good. I like the fact that he considers Yomer a brother. I love, you know, that's how your clubhouse should work. You know, traditionally clubhouses have been, as you know, Carm, cliques. And that's why here's the song. Give me a half an hour for a shave and a shower, and I'll be outside your house. Might have a little dirt on my boots, but I'm
yes.
Is this Tim or is this Pardee? So, Carm, you got to put that to music with Dan Long, our executive producer, and you got to play that for the Sox. You know, you could get that to Yomer. Make sure Yomer gets a copy of that.
I mean, it takes courage in the middle of the clubhouse to actually just dial up and sing.
Mm-hmm.
I give him an A+ for effort. Hey, you should enjoy Guaranteed Rate Field just like a player. You can play catch in the outfield. You can warm up in the bullpens. You can visit the dugouts and much more. Take your experience to the next level and purchase a premier ticket that includes hitting in the batting cages. And you can join the White Sox for Family Field Day. It's Saturday, May 12th. The Sox will be playing the Cubs at Wrigley Field, but you can come over here and support White Sox Charities, do all of that, and to purchase tickets, visit WhiteSoxCharities.org. How sweet is that? Do a little BP?
That's great. I mean, that's phenomenal, and that's something you can't buy in a store, so, you know, get out there then.
Yeah, and just also a reminder, there is Star Wars Night is coming up at Guaranteed Rate Field. That's Saturday, May 19th, Sox and the Texas Rangers, first 20,000 fans, receive a Hawk Solo bobblehead that the Wimperoo was talking about earlier.
Great commercial.
Presented by TransUnion. Visit WhiteSox.com to purchase your tickets today. Andy Mazur talked to Dylan Cease. That's coming up here, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Sox and the Twins coming up. Andy Mazur's got the pregame at 5:35. Andy also talking to Dylan Cease. We'll get to that in a second. But remember, head to the park for Dollar Vienna Beef Hot Dogs every Wednesday home game this season. Take advantage of this unbeatable deal on Wednesday, May 9th, as the Sox take on the Pittsburgh Pirates at 1:10 p.m. Get your tickets at WhiteSox.com today. All right. Andy Mazur doing your pregame show, doing work, and he's doing work talking to hopefully a pitcher who will be here in the next couple of years, Dylan Cease. Here's Maze with Dylan.
Joined by White Sox prospect Dylan Cease. And Dylan, we certainly appreciate you taking the time. You guys seem like you're having a lot of fun down there in Winston-Salem.
Oh, yeah, we definitely are. It's probably been one of the most fun clubs I've been on, actually, in my professional career so far.
Couple of guys that kind of stand out offensively down there. I wonder if you could just give us a couple of thoughts on each of these guys, Mike Rodolfo and then Luis Basabe.
Yeah, they've both been crushing it. It seems like they're barreling up almost everything. And, you know, Mike's hitting them 500 feet over center. So those guys, offense is doing great, and the pitching and defense is doing well, too. So it's been a good run so far.
And a couple of exciting wins with a steal of home and a suicide squeeze to go along with that.
Yeah. We're not afraid to manufacture however we have to. So that's been fun too.
Let's talk about you. Let's go back to February when you got the invite to go to White Sox big league camp. And first of all, what was that experience like for you, just being able to get into a major league camp and show your stuff?
Yeah, I was really grateful for that. You know, obviously it's your first one, so it's a little bit nerve-wracking going in, but it was a really good experience, you know, to see how kind of everything runs up there and how the big league guys carry themselves and what they do to be successful. So I was really grateful for that opportunity.
You know, as a younger guy, do you have to kind of guard against maybe trying to do a little too much to show yourself off and to get even more on the radar?
No, I'm kind of the opposite. I feel I made sure to not be the loud guy in the locker room and you know, kind of just see how everything's going and feel it out.
What was the experience like working with Don Cooper?
Oh, that was great. You know, it's always cool when you get to, you know, have the big league pitching coach sit and watch your sides and critique you and tell you what he thinks you need to work on. So, you know, I was really excited and grateful for that as well.
Now, were you able to take all the lessons that you learned up there right into your first couple of games with Winston-Salem without really much thought process involved with it, just kind of pick up where you left off?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, you know, early in the season, you always have to kind of make little adjustments to what you're doing. But, you know, I was able to take what I was working on in spring training and continue to kind of integrate it into what I'm doing out here for sure.
And the things they wanted you to work on, I heard you talking a lot during spring training about mechanics and kind of the basics, mm-hmm. you know, with the fastball command and also working on your off-speed stuff. How do you think that's gone for you?
It's been great so far. I want to be more consistent with my curveball, but that's not gonna take me long. You know, it's just a little feel thing. Change has been good. I've been throwing it more, and you know, for the most part, I've been pleased with my command. So I just got to continue to keep following my routine and my process, and keep working on all that.
And obviously, you want to be competitive when you're playing down there, and you want to obviously win as many games as you possibly can. But do you find yourself, you know, maybe taking some chances, you know, throwing an off-speed pitch and maybe a fastball count just to kind of see how batters react to it?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, it's good to get used to doing that, you know, down here, because I'm sure up there you're going to have to do it at some point. You know, for the most part, I have just been attacking with the fastball and mixing in off-speed. But, it's good to practice that stuff down here.
All right, I got to ask you the question about what it's like to be able to throw a ball 100 miles an hour. I mean, I know a lot of people dream about doing that, but that's got to feel pretty cool. And just explain the process, because it's not all arm, right?
No, it is. It's an awesome feeling. You know, how would I describe it? It's tough. It almost just feels like the ball is a feather in your hand and you're letting it go. For me, I just try to be as relaxed as I can and then kind of explode at the end of my motion. It is kind of hard to describe it, but it is a great feeling.
Yeah, and you know, again, it's body, it's just mechanics too that kind of go all hand in hand with that, right?
Yeah, definitely mechanics, body awareness. You know, the smoother you are, the better your arm action is, the better results you're going to have, and the easier it is to be consistent, which is really what pitching is all about.
Let's go back to last year at the trade deadline. You're in the Cubs organization, and then you kind of find out that you're being traded. And for a young guy, sometimes that's a weird feeling and sometimes an uneasy feeling. Can you remember what it felt like when you were told that you were heading to a new organization?
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit uncomfortable. It was exciting and comfortable at the same time because I had a lot of good relationships with my Cubs teammates and trainers and all that. And so that was a little bit tough, but, you know, it's exciting at the same time. You get to go somewhere new. You get to meet new people and kind of start, you know, a new thing and see what they've got in store for you. So it was definitely a weird, you know, couple days, but I'm happy how it turned out so far.
Yeah, and I think the Sox organization is pretty happy with the way things turned out as well so far. Let's get into your personal life real quick here, and I'm not going to dig real deep here, but just looking at your bio from the White Sox, growing up with a twin brother, what's that like?
Yeah, I got a twin brother. He's going to be a pilot. I'd say we communicate mostly via Fortnite lately, but you know, I try to keep in touch with my family as much as I can.
As a pilot, did he play baseball with you when you guys were growing up?
He did, actually. On our high school team, my junior year, we won state championship, and we were down to two strikes in the first round, I believe, and he hit a game-tying double, or he hit a big hit that kind of, you know, kept us in the game, and we were able to win it that year. So Yeah, he's always been there. He actually he called my last game in high school as well.
Oh, pretty cool. I mean, just to be able to have your brother on the same field and then have him come through in the clutch like that for a team. But then he decided that he wasn't going to follow the baseball dream. He was going to follow other dreams, and that's flying planes, huh?
Yeah. He's going to be a pilot. I've actually ridden in a plane with him, and it was a little bit scary because the plane was from, like, 1940, and they didn't tell us that they had to switch from the main fuel to the aux fuel at some point. So there was a point where we were, like, free-falling for a couple seconds, and it was kind of in the middle of a storm. So I did fly commercial back home after that.
I don't blame you. And no offense to the brother. I mean, that's something that just don't tell you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would fly up again with him, for sure.
Hey, were you guys fans of the Braves growing up?
Yeah, big Braves fan. I was more just a fan of a lot of players in general. A-Rod was my guy back in the day, but, you know, Chipper Jones and all the stud pitchers, I loved any of those guys.
Dylan Cease and Andy Mazur, great stuff there, and good decision by Dylan flying commercial there. That is a wise choice. Hey, Sox fans, back by popular demand, the Chicago White Sox are offering a limited edition Cancer Ribbon White Sox cap. It's $29.99, $10 from every cap sold will support White Sox charities and Rush University Medical Center in cancer research. Caps are available in the park and at the Chicago Sports Depot for a limited time. You can get your hat today and join the team for a great cause, which I think is near and dear to nearly almost all of us, right? Somebody you know who has had a battle with cancer. Again, great to have Dylan Cease. Can't wait to see him at Guaranteed Rate Field down the line here at some point. White Sox Weekly wrapping up. We'll get you into news, and then Andy's got the pregame show. Sox and the Twins coming up. This is 720 WGN.